The Hard Line with Mike Reiner, Greg Williams, and Friendly Cobra on Dallas-Fort Worth's original all-sports station. Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket.
The time is 3:54. This is Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket. The Hard Line out here at Fat Daddy's in lovely Denton today. Nice to be up here at the home of North Texas State today. We're going to turn our attention for the better part of the presentation today to the events of tomorrow, or to the events of 40 years ago tomorrow. And if you've been watching any TV this week or listening to any kind of radio, you know that the Learing Press has gotten a hold of this, and they are really taking it and running with it and just maxing out the whole Kennedy thing from virtually every angle that it can be maxed out. And what we thought we would do is not really get into any kind of conspiracy theory or single bullet or anything like that. That's been all over the place as well. But what we're going to do is focus today on what it was like to be in Dallas on that day, and what if a fellow, say, were listening to the radio, and the radio station of his choice might have been KLIF, the Mighty 1190, which for many it was, as that was the preeminent radio station back in Dallas that day. We're going to focus on what a fellow might have heard had that been the case. And to help us out to this end, we've enlisted the help of one Steve Eberhardt, who joins us out here at Fat Daddy's. Hello, Steve.
Hello there.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing real good. We appreciate all that you have done to bring this about, the audio that you brought, and you coming out here to Fat Daddy's. And as it turns out, this is turf that you're not totally unfamiliar with, right?
I have stomped around here just a little while. Yeah, North Texas graduate, and actually lived here for about 12 years. And thank you. Used to drive back and forth to Dallas to work at KVIL and KLEV for all those years, and then finally moved on down to Dallas. But around here a lot. Got a lot of relatives that actually live here, too.
And as you mentioned, and as it turns out, Steve is indeed a broadcast veteran. How long were you at KVIL?
9 years.
From when to when?
Oh, well, I did 2 10-years there. I was there from 78 to 84.
Ah, the halcyon days.
Yep. And
78? You had to be pretty young then.
Yeah, I was real young. 20 years old, something like that.
Wow. And that's pretty good getting a job at KVIL when you're 20 years old.
I had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And usually worked late at night and then went to school up here during the day. Worked at KLEV in the afternoon for about 4 years and then went back to KVIL for 3 years or so more. Did some work on Mix. And I still work at ABC Radio Network on a national network that goes out nationally from Dallas on a part-time basis.
All right.
Stay at home with kids. Mm-hmm. I'm a stay-at-home dad, by and large, and listen to you guys every afternoon. It's really funny because when I'm in the carpool to pick up my daughter at 3 o'clock, I have it on.
Right.
And my three almost four-year-old son's in the back seat all the time, right?
Oh, my.
Uh-huh. So
stories,
you know,
like this make me nervous.
Yeah,
Steve.
This should, because like about 3:10, you know, there's nothing like forgetting the fact that you guys start out with that SOB, SOB, SOB thing,
mm-hmm.
and forgetting to turn the radio down, and 3 seconds after hearing it on the air, hearing your three-year-old repeat it back to you.
Nice.
That, so nice.
That's very nice.
But we do enjoy it.
That makes us very proud.
Right.
That makes
right.
us very, very proud.
It really makes us know we're sending a positive message out there for the youth of tomorrow.
Yes.
All right. Now, you are also the major domo of historyofcliff.com.
Right.
And I must say that as websites of any kind go, this is one of the best I've ever seen. Now, granted, it's right up my alley.
Right.
I mean, it's something that I would be, as a native and a KLIF nut myself when I was a kid growing up and stuff.
Right.
Obviously, this is going to be right up my alley. But, you know, when I go to a website, we were talking about this yesterday. When I go to a website, I want to come away from it thinking that some really great links have been gone to really get it right, you know?
Right.
And you've done that with historyofcliff.com.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's really interesting the way it all started, because I had been surfing around on the web, and I saw some websites for, you know, some of these other really popular radio stations that from the golden age of the top 40 era back in the 60s and early 70s. And the WLSs in Chicago, KHJs Los Angeles, WABC in New York, stuff like that. But there's nothing on Cliff. And I thought, well, that's wild, because KLIF at that time, just to give you an example, was a radio station that was gargantuan, not only because it had a signal that could be heard within 100 miles of Dallas, but ratings that went along with that hugeness. Today, a radio station with a 6 or 7 share might be the number one radio station in Dallas. Back then, they had 60% of the audience during some times of the day. Just an enormous station, so it was hugely popular. I was shocked that there wasn't a website set up to commemorate that. So I called the current Cliff and asked them if they had any plans to do anything like that. They said, no, give it a shot. So just from my memory of growing up listening to the radio station, and I never worked there, but I had worked with a lot of people that had worked there previously and had heard all the stories and had followed this. I had actually had talked to Gordon McClendon one time, just called him up at his office, and he spent an hour speaking to me. And so I just relayed some of those memories that I had speaking to him, speaking to other people that worked there, just my own memory of it, and started this thing, and it just started out like a couple of pages. And the thing that was interesting about it is, as time went on, people would discover this thing, and they would send me a story. Maybe they were a former jock or
right.
a news person or an employee that worked at the radio station. They would send me some photographs, and I'd put those photographs on and then put their little story in there. And over the last 3 or 4 years, it's just built itself, really. And it's just been phenomenal how many people that I have contacted and have shared their own information, photographs, memorabilia, what have you, that has furthered the radio station's website up. It's totally unofficial. It really isn't sanctioned by the current KLIF or anything like that, but it's just been phenomenal from the standpoint of who I've heard from as well since this thing has been up. All of the people that I used to listen to are now friends of mine, it seems like. I've made friends with all these former DJs and stuff that, you know, really were the inspiration for me to get into radio all those years ago as well.
Who are some of them?
Well, I grew up with, in the early 60s with people like Charlie and Harrigan. Ron Chapman, of course, who I later worked with, was part of that. Charlie Van Dyke, who actually used to date my mother-in-law when they were in high school back in Dallas, as I found out many, many years later. He and I became friends. Ken Dow is a good friend of mine now. I'd like to count him on the list. And, of course, he was through many years of the Ken and Granny morning show on there and has helped contribute a lot of things. Randy Robbins was one of their night jocks who has become a friend. I'm just off the top of my head naming names here. Michael O'Shea, who was a longtime midday and morning man on the radio station, now an owner of radio stations out on the West Coast, and has done phenomenal in his career. Just, it's been amazing through the course of time who I've heard from and their contributions to the whole thing.
Was it hard to get the audio tape, get access to a lot of the audio you have on there?
I had some audio just from tapes that I made myself as a kid, you know, on my little cassette recorder or whatever. And, you know, again, as people have started to contact me through the years, it just kind of took on a life of its own. And people started sending me audio tapes. And there's almost not a week go by that I don't get a tape from somebody. And, some of them are things I already actually have, because a lot of these things float around and there's people that collect that. I'm not as much a radio geek as a lot of people might think I am, truly. But there are some people out there that are totally into this kind of thing. I know a guy down in Houston who sat down one day and was able to tell me the chronological order what disc jockey worked, what shift, literally down to the day. And he knew this off the top of his head. It was just phenomenal.
Wow.
And we included that in the website, but, I mean, I couldn't come anywhere close to that.
You know, I was trying to explain to everybody just what Cliff was back then and just how big it was and how it was really an all-things-to-all-people radio station.
It really was. You know, the radio stations that are popular today, you might have a station such as this, The Ticket, which is, you know, hugely popular for mostly male listeners and people that are interested in sports and talk and stuff like that. You have other stations that play hip-hop music. You have
right.
one that plays country,
right.
adult contemporary.
Right. Everybody is trying to look for their own little fairly narrow slice. Yeah, niche.
Everybody's got their little niche.
Right.
Back then, it wasn't necessarily that way. Several reasons why. one, you didn't have as many radio stations, mm-hmm. whereas now we've got, what, 30-plus signals in the market. You've got lots of choices. It's kind of like what cable has done to television.
Right.
In radio back then, you had, you know, a handful of radio stations that covered the entire Dallas-Fort Worth market. You might have three or four radio stations doing top 40. And top 40 at the time was not what it was today. You know, top 40 then, you might hear a Tammy Wynette, Stand By Your Man, followed by, you know, a Beatles song, followed by a Jimi Hendrix song, followed by something by the Dave Clark Five. You know,
the scope was really wide back then.
Very wide. And one of the reasons is because the format appealed to all ages. A station like KLIF was huge because it had listeners not only in the teen crowd, they all were glued to the radio for listening to the obvious teen-oriented music and such, and the contests and all of that kind of stuff, personal appearances. But you had adults listening to that radio station as well, which would be unheard of for a radio station that appealed to teens today would not appeal to an adult. But back then it did work because they had the magic method to make it work. They also were as popular for their news as they were for their music programming and everything else. They were the news authority of the city at the time.
And you know, the funny thing is, when I explain all this to people, that's the thing that throws them off.
Yeah.
They're saying, now, wait a minute, it's a music station, but they also had a big news operation,
too? They had a huge news operation.
Yeah, they did.
And the thing that was interesting is, like I said, they were as popular for their news as they were for anything else they did. On most top 40 radio stations across the country at the time, the WLSs, KHJs, and WABCs, those stations treated their news like it was just a tune-out factor, something they had to do to meet the FCC requirements. They threw it on there, got out of it as quick as they could, and just ignored it. KLIF, on the other hand, promoted it, built it into a solid aspect of the radio station that was on an equal bearing with the rest of what they programmed on the radio station.
I still think that could be done today.
Well,
I still think if somebody were to apply that and put enough money in it and promote it enough, I think it would work.
Well, the reason that it won't now is because you have more choices, that's a huge factor in
but
it.
But if you're better than everybody else, people are going to find you.
That has always been an argument that I've had as well, that if you take the time and have
the best
dedication
music,
to do it, it could still work. I don't know. But, you know, the problem is you just don't find people in the industry that are that dedicated to it.
Because consultants have screwed this whole business up.
Well, sure they have, and others as well.
All right, so armed with all that and the knowledge of what KLIF was, and against that backdrop, let us take a break here. And when we come back, we will take you to that day in 1963 and just go from there with Steve Eberhardt, the curator, if you will, of historyofcliff.com. This is Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket.